Christopher Harris, the host of the World Soccer Talk podcast, and I'm joined by my co-host, Kartik Krishnayar. Kartik, it's a fun time of the year. It's the late July, we're heading into early August, and we've got a lot of things to look forward to, in particular, a new season of Premier League football, as well as, of course, all the leagues from around Europe. Before you know it, the UEFA Champions League group stage will be here, and so on and so forth, and the World Cup will be here in just a few months. Let's talk about some of the news that's been coming out from this past week. It's been a while since we've had a chance to talk about the media rights business and kind of the soccer media business in general. Now, Kartik, I'm sure you followed this story. You were interviewed by Sportico about it. But this week, the big news from U.S. soccer is the Sacramento Republic knocking out Sporting Kansas City in the U.S. Open Cup semifinal and going through to the final, which they'll play in September against Orlando City in Orlando for the U.S. Open Cup final. Exciting news, and if anyone missed the celebrations, definitely check it out on social media. But Kartik, I think USL couldn't have picked a better time to negotiate its next TV deal with ESPN. Do you agree?
Certainly. And I think also given the sort of conversations that USL has had very publicly around restructuring, promotion relegation, calendar change, some of the reforms that reformers in the game have badly wanted for years in this country and never expected to come from USL of all entities. In fact, if you had put a gun to my head 10 years ago, I would have said MLS is more likely to do that stuff than USL. USL seemed very, very traditional. But Jake Edwards has come in there, along with support from Alec and Justin Papadakis, and really changed the culture within the league. And the other thing that has very definitively happened, as I discussed in that Sportico article where I was interviewed, was that you have big markets that I think are MLS level markets: Sacramento, Tampa Bay, San Antonio, Louisville, sticking with USL. And in USL long term, that's just a handful of them, but there are more. So USL is in a position of strength vis-a-vis the general soccer landscape that they've never been in before.
It's interesting, though, too, Kartik, because you look at Detroit City, and if you sat down right now with a forum of Detroit City FC supporters, and you asked them, hey, guys, would you rather be in USL or Major League Soccer? What would their answer be?
They would all say USL. In fact, there are a lot of fans who don't want their teams in MLS now, which is not what was the case 10 years ago, right? Everybody wanted to be in MLS, which was a major strategic error. I'll reveal some company secrets here. When I was at NASL, I internally, and this kind of led to my ostracization within the organization, I knew this was the case, that fans, there was no fan group, there was no set of fans except for small niche, small niches that would say, hey, I'd rather my team be in a lower division than be in MLS. That just wasn't the case in 2012 and 2013 when we at NASL were making our move against MLS. Now in 2022, as USL is in a stronger position than NASL ever was, that is the case. You have fans in San Antonio. You have 95% of the fans in Detroit. You have, I would say, the majority of fans in Tampa Bay. I would say a lot of fans in Sacramento because they've been directly burned by MLS, and et cetera. And many markets saying, you know what? We like this league better. We like the culture of this league better. We like the way they're going in terms of direction from a business standpoint and a cultural standpoint. And being in USL doesn't diminish our enjoyment. We don't have to be in MLS to enjoy being supporters and going to a match and watching a match with our friends on television or at home with our families, whatever the case, wearing our scarves, wearing our kits. We don't have to be in MLS to enjoy that more than we do in USL. And that is a big cultural change from a decade ago.
And we've seen, too, just in the last couple of months, in terms of the USL TV numbers that they got for some of the games on ESPN, with basically zero promotion. I mean, USL really hasn't been promoted nowhere near to the extent that Major League Soccer has in the last decade in terms of, I mean, MLS being promoted across, I mean, Fox, ABC, ESPN, you know, Univision, you name it. And then here comes USL with some games on Saturdays. And those games, TV viewing numbers wise, were greater than what FS1, Major League Soccer games were getting on FS1, and relatively close to what MLS was getting on ESPN. So basically in the same ballpark. But Kartik, when it comes to the play-in levels, when we watch a USL game that's on ESPN on a Saturday afternoon, whether it's Detroit City or whether it's Hartford Athletic or anyone else, what would you say in terms of the play-in levels? How much of a difference is there between MLS and USL?
MLS is better in terms of technical players, having star power, having those guys who can create individual moments of brilliance. And this is something that I've noticed. Obviously, I go way back. I mean, I go back to when the team I worked for was in the previous incarnation of USL. So I've compared the second division with the first division in this country going back probably to 2006, 2007, very closely. I'd say MLS is a better league and has overall better players. But here's what has effectively happened, and maybe our viewers don't get the quite our listeners, excuse me, not our viewers, our listeners don't quite grasp this. Because MLS has a fairly hard salary cap, we've seen exceptions made, we've seen it maybe grow a little softer at times, but because they do have a cap, what you have is you have the top-level players in this country in MLS. You also have guys who can then fill out salary spots in order to keep a team under the cap or keep a team compliant. That means you have a number of players somewhere in the middle, maybe they're in the bottom third, but they're at the higher end of the bottom third, ending up in USL. And we took advantage of this at NASL. I mean, I actually had a database, a spreadsheet with players that, hey, this guy was making 90 or 100. Now it would be more in MLS. But this guy, you know, might get squeezed by the cap. Maybe Atlanta can sign him. Maybe Fort Lauderdale can sign him, etc. Same thing USL is clearly doing. I mean, they're getting guys that are in that kind of a squishy middle that gets squeezed by the cap because you're signing high-end guys. Now, TAM and GAM have addressed this to a certain extent. So there are fewer of those guys than there were 5-6 years ago, but there's still enough. In addition, USL is doing a really good job of scouting and is getting more good young players than they did 5 or 6 years ago. And in fact, they've been able to move some of those young players directly to Europe. And the incentive to sign in USL, if you're a young player, is you're not tied into the MLS ecosystem where they may or may not sell you. They may overvalue you. They won't let you go. There's a possibility they won't let you go when you want to go or when your agent feels you're ready to go. MLS has gotten better about that, admittedly, Chris. They're selling more guys at a young age to Europe. They're letting guys go at 18 or 19. But some of the agents I talk to still think USL is a safer bet. If they can get their guys in a shop window at a USL club that's willing to flip the player in a year and send them to Europe, that to them has added value, right? You know, MLS, you may not be able to get out of that deal. You don't sign one-year deals. And then there's always a bureaucracy involved in getting a guy out of MLS that there isn't in USL.
I would argue that the playing level between USL and MLS isn't that much different. Yes, MLS is definitely better, and MLS has those stars, those types of players like you mentioned, Kartik, that can create something out of nothing. And it's something that's what makes the difference between no matter like kind of what kind of an average player and a star player, the game changers. And there's definitely more game changers in MLS, understandably so, in terms of how much money that MLS has. But USL, I mean, we've seen here with Sacramento now going all the way to the final and probably having a good chance against Orlando. I'm sure Orlando's certainly the favorites to win the final. But it just goes to show that the quality level with USL isn't that much different. If you did a Pepsi challenge and you saw two games on television, and you didn't know who the teams were, and you just watched the game the way that the games were played, you wouldn't notice that much of a difference. I mean, USL is a very advanced in terms of technical ability, the way that they play systems, the actual kind of shape on the field. They are playing good football. And in every USL game I've watched, I haven't walked away said like, ah, oh, that's just like kind of Route 1 soccer, or that's just, you mean, primitive, archaic. That's just, you mean, I don't see that. So when I watch USL games and I watch MLS games, I don't notice that much of a difference.
Yeah, I think one of the things that happened when I was at the NASL is that we were able to develop with some of our coaches, a few that moved on to MLS, like Gio Savarese, we were able to develop, I think, more tactical variation in our league than MLS at the time. And we had 10 teams and they had 20 teams or whatever they had in a given year, right? It changes every year in MLS. But we were able to develop more tactical variation, more interesting tactical battles than maybe you saw in MLS. Now, I think MLS has evolved since then tactically. Not all the teams were playing the same way. There were some definite variations. I would give Jesse Marsh, who I know we'll end up talking about later in this podcast in reference to his work in the Premier League now, I'd give him a lot of credit because I think when he brought his system, it didn't really work in Montreal, but brought his system into Red Bull, that kind of changed the trajectory of the way the league was going. Same thing with Greg Berhalter at Columbus at the time. I would also argue, Chris, I think MLS is a better product in terms of play because I am accustomed to watching American domestic soccer. I'm accustomed to working in American domestic soccer. For the average Premier League fan or La Liga fan who doesn't watch U.S. domestic soccer regularly, the products will look roughly the same. So I think there's some truth in what you're saying that there isn't much of a difference. I just know the difference because I've worked in the game in this country and have had to watch, you know, dozens of games a weekend at one time when I worked at NASL or worked at individual clubs. But yeah, for the average European fan or fan of European football in this country, the differences are not that obvious. I think there are differences in business and management that propel MLS ahead of USL and propelled them ahead of NASL when I was at NASL. Those differences are shrinking as well as USL really ramps up their business operation and their individual clubs get better at selling sponsorships and selling tickets. So, you know, watch that space because I think that's where there is a gap, but it's closing.
One more thing on this too, Kartik, is that even the supporters culture, now MLS has, each individual club has its own supporters culture of its own. Some of them are really good. Some of them are, they're okay. Nothing special, but that is something that USL has. They definitely have in certain cities, same again too. Detroit City being the perfect example of just, I mean, Sacramento too, just a great supporters culture. And it just goes to show that, again, that local is so important in terms of if it's your local team, it's a team you embrace, whether it's in USL or MLS or NISA or whatever league it may be, there's that local attachment, there's that connection to that local team. And that's something you don't get with the TV connection where you do support a team, you mean, I don't know, Arsenal or Chelsea, whoever it may be, until they come to this, to the United States and play friendlies. And then you kind of see that bond. You can connect with them in a deeper way.
Quite frankly, some of the better supporters groups in MLS and supporters cultures were honed when those sides or those cities were in USL or NASL. I can think of, I would say the majority of examples in MLS are teams that the supporters culture was really built when they were in either USL or NASL. So there is definitely some truth to this. And yeah, I think the supporters culture and the vibrancy of supporters in terms of how they dominate a stadium or an atmosphere is greater in USL than in MLS currently.
So, Kartik, let's move on to a big news in the TV and streaming news section here. And that talks about, speaking of Major League Soccer, some revealing information this week from SBJ.
Yeah, in a report this week in SBJ, MLS is close to a linear TV deal with ESPN and Fox Sports, which will be for a lot less money than last time. Although, again, they have the Apple deal in hand, which is a streaming deal. But things are not progressing as quickly or as positively on the Spanish language side with Univision. The issues that Univision have with the new NMLS deal are a couple. Beginning in 2023 through 2033, They won't have exclusive rights to Spanish language broadcasts for any MLS games they show. Apple TV will be showing all games in English and Spanish, which will cannibalize their broadcast audience. Univision wanted some games exclusive to VIX Plus, which we've talked about is a big deal for Televisa and Univision, their new paid streaming service. But with the Apple TV deal, that can't happen, right? That's unless Apple were very generous and were willing to sublicense them games, which I don't think in any way is realistic. According to SBJ reporters Alex Silverman and John Orrond, they quote, "It's clear that Univision is not making MLS a top priority, and Univision's primary interest in an MLS deal lies in airing matches from the expanded Leagues Cup, which we thought was going to be a good incentive for Spanish-language broadcasters, which beginning in 2023 will feature all 47 teams from MLS and Liga MX. Univision sources say that the network sees some value in retaining MLS matches, but this is the key, Chris. If only to support its brand positioning as the home of soccer in the U.S. And I think that's a similar situation with Fox and ESPN, quite frankly. It's a brand positioning thing to say they have MLS as part of their portfolio, more than whatever value MLS gives them. So what are your thoughts, Chris, on this?
Yeah, I think that's a key point that you mentioned there, Kartik, and emphasized, is that I think for ESPN, Fox, and Univision, they feel that they have to show soccer from the United States in order to make that connection with the U.S. audience. I mean, imagine if it's a network such as NBC that is not showing any U.S. games. NBC is great with the Premier League, does great coverage, etc. But there is a disconnect. And I think for Fox, especially with all of their USMNT guys and doing the World Cup coverage and all the international tournaments that they have, I think it's important that they still have some roots with Major League Soccer and still show U.S. soccer. Same with ESPN. ESPN has John Champion and Taylor Twellman. Imagine if those guys didn't have any MLS games to call. It would seem really strange. It would seem like a disconnect. How can they talk kind of extensively about the U.S. men's national team if they can't talk about MLS games that they're showing? In Univision, this is key because Univision's been one of the biggest supporters of Major League Soccer. They've put a lot of effort and time into broadcasting games. And we discussed on a few podcasts ago about how Univision, actually, this is from Felipe Cardenas from The Athletic when we had him on the show. He talked about how Univision wanted to shake things up. They wanted to go ahead and be more experimental. They wanted MLS to be more flexible, to try a different calendar, to try to go ahead and create a special night for coverage, to try to do these things that would be exciting, engaging, would be kind of testing things, seeing how things work. But Major League Soccer as a whole, as an institution, is very stubborn, is very set in its ways. It's very unlikely to change, and that's not a good thing. So Univision is in a spot here where they're like, hey, Why should we go ahead and spend big time money to get rights to these games that Apple TV has the rights to on the Spanish language side? That cannibalizes our audience. That doesn't make it any sense for us to go in big and spend a lot of money on showing these games if you've got a streaming service that's showing every single game in Spanish. So some of my additional thoughts on this, Kartik, is that MLS has really shot themselves in the foot here by screwing up their TV partnerships in order to rush in and cash in on the money that Apple was offering. In a perfect world, I think Major League Soccer would have been able to find a deal that would have satisfied their TV partners and streaming services at the same time. And then they would announce this deal at the same time and say, hey, like we did in 2015, we've got ESPN, Univision, and Fox at the table. We're here to make a joint announcement with Major League Soccer to announce this great new deal that we have. That never happened. It was a very last-minute deal that MLS did with Apple and said, okay, here's the information. ESPN, Fox, Univision was not included in any of that. So by doing the streaming deal first between Apple and Major League Soccer, the TV rights now feel like leftovers. And that cold leftovers. So Apple, as part of this deal, is paying $250 million per year for the global rights to every single MLS game for the next 10 years. So over 10 years, that's $2.5 billion, but $250 million a year. As one comparison, the Premier League is getting each year for the international and domestic deals combined $4 billion. So which would you rather, $4 billion or $250 million? And that's the thing. I mean, yes, the Premier League is far more popular, far better than Major League Soccer, but that puts it into perspective. This Apple TV deal is fantastic for consumers. However, we don't know what the price is yet. But for the consumer, it's a win for the consumer because we can get access to every single game in Spanish or English or both for the next 10 years. And we don't have to worry about trying to figure out who's got what game. Is it going to be a TV? Is it going to be delayed slightly because there's a College World Series baseball game that's happening right before it, or whatever it may be. It's easy. So it's easy for Apple. It's easy for the consumer. But for Major League Soccer, I'd really feel, in hindsight, looking at this deal more closely, is that they've really shot themselves in the foot. Kartik, let's move on. One more news item, and that is the Premier League. The Premier League has a brand new deal with NBC Sports that begins in August 5th, for the next 6 years. We talked about this deal extensively. They've renewed the deal. However, there's golf. There's the Women's Open Golf Tournament that's starting. And because of the World Cup, the Premier League is starting a week earlier than usual. And because the U.S. Women's... it's not even the U.S. It's the Women's Open Tournament, which is going to be, in Scotland, I think it is. Because that game's across USA Network and because NBCSN is no more, for the opening weekend of the Premier League season, 80% of the games are going to be on Peacock and only two games on TV. So I think that's the Palace Arsenal game, and I think it's the Chelsea Everton game. Both of those are on TV on USA Network, everything else on Peacock. So Kartik, last week's podcast, you mentioned that you got your Peacock subscription order renewed. Aren't you glad?
Yeah, because otherwise I'd be out of luck this first weekend of the season. And probably because the Premier League is sneaking up on us this year, weeks earlier, as you mentioned, maybe I wouldn't have renewed it on my own or would have been scrambling the last day to renew it.
All right, let's just move on to the listener mailbag. We've just got a few comments here. Let's go through these. First up is Greg talking about the Champions League rights being up for sale in the United States. Greg says, it's interesting about the Champions League broker's view that the rights are undervalued, yet broadcasters who've had the rights say that there's only so much they can wring out in ad dollars because of UEFA's hold on ad time. Makes me think that they see the path as higher streaming fees. That crew who were behind the International Champions Cup strike me as the kind of rich jerks who don't get that the average person has a price point they won't cross. If they succeed in getting the money they want, I'll bet the result is fewer games available overall, only the top teams, and you've had to pay much more for it than the current Paramount Plus cost. With the Champions League, Kartik, it feels like, to me, it's almost like what's the expression? It's I can't think of it right this second, but it's one of those things that, you know, sometimes companies buy a product that they know that it's going to lose money. But it is a prestige thing where it's like, hey, we've got the rights to whatever it may be. We know that this is going to lose money, but it puts us on the map. This is we have one of the things that's most important in club soccer and club tournament soccer. However, we're probably not going to make money. We're probably not going to even break even. We're going to lose money on this. But us having this is an important stake kind of in the ground, and this will help us sell other, whether it's properties or streaming services or other leagues, whatever it may be. But that's what it feels like to me, is that everyone knows that they want it, everyone knows that they're going to lose money on it, but and there is a fight for it too, because if you have the Champions League rights, whether you love the tournament or not, it's a big statement. It's a big thing. So we know who has the Champions League rights every single year. And it is important. It is important to have that, especially with the European Super League kind of morphed into this Champions League, where you do have the top teams and the top players. And Kartik, you and I know this too. PSG, you see so many PSG shirts all around. However, they're not watching League One games. They're watching Champions League games with Messi.
Yeah, although, I mean, again, I think we're looking at a situation where networks have to decide, as this price goes up, this price point for Champions League goes up with the third-party broker in Relevant Sports, is it really worth it to lose that kind of money or just break even on a property that takes this much airtime and this much production and this much bumper programming, as we've seen with CBS? So that I think that there's a real decision that has to be made in boardrooms of major networks about it, unlike the Premier League and unlike other properties.
Yeah, the phrase I was looking for that I couldn't think of is loss leader. But I think somebody like Apple TV or Amazon with billions in cash could use this as a loss leader. Because that would put them on the map, right? I mean, if you're Apple TV and you can say, hey, we have the rights to the UEFA Champions League, and this is going to be a six-year deal. So we're going to have a six-year deal for the Champions League, and we've got MLS also. I mean, for an average soccer fan, that may make the difference in getting them to sign up for it. Vice versa, I mean, if it's Amazon Prime, and they say, hey, we have the Champions League for the next 6 years from 2024 onwards, It's a big deal. I mean, then all of a sudden people will subscribe to that service just because they have the Champions League. So loss leader, but then it's maybe for Apple and for Amazon, they can sell other services. They can sell Amazon Prime. They can sell on Apple TV, maybe subscriptions to Apple TV or Apple Music or Apple products or AirPods or whatever. So it is a loss leader, and it may come down to maybe an Apple versus Amazon at that point, if that's the expectation in terms of the rights fee for this competition, which is supposed to be ginormous. And it would push out the traditional TV broadcasters, even if they are media giants such as Paramount or Fox, etc. Let's move on. In regards to Paramount Plus, speaking of that, JP had some comments about crowd noise and some of the comments from some of our listeners saying that the crowd noise on some games is different than others. JP says, in regards to the crowd noise on Paramount Plus matches, it varies by league. Brasileiro is usually non-existent on the English commentary feed. It's like watching it in a fishbowl. It improves if you choose the Portuguese feed, but it's still muted. Serie A is quite good when it's the world feed. When it's Andres Cordero and Matteo Bonetti, and not the rare times they're on site, the crowd seems to be turned down more than usual. It was the same situation on beIN Sports. Very good with the world feed and almost the same fishbowl feel when they used in-house commentary. And Kartik, we've seen that in person when we've gone to Goal TV many, many years ago, watching how they do the audio and just trying to find that balance between making sure the commentators are not drowned out by the crowd noise so you can hear the commentators. And I think it's more of a technological thing, though, too. There's got to be a way to kind of blend those two together better than it is currently. But it is something that avid soccer viewers such as ourselves do notice when we're watching games, and the crowd noise sounds muted. And then you listen to it, the same game maybe on a radio commentary, and it sounds like it's alive. It's electric. Moving on, Dave talks about the Women's Euro 2022 coverage. I'm enjoying the coverage by Tudorne and ESPN. I agree that ESPN is a bit rough around the edges in the studio, but it's great that they have shoulder programming. Interesting to hear that from Kartik that club interest tends to lead international interest for women's soccer in Europe. Chris Guardino says about the Bundesliga 2. I watched the Bundesliga 2 match recently between Hannover and St. Pauli. And I have to say that Bundesliga 2 is about equal to the EFL Championship in terms of being the best second division in Europe, both in terms of play and the atmosphere inside the stadium. definitely one league I will be watching more of this season. I have a question about the rights to the UEFA club competitions, with how the rights have been delinked between MLS and US soccer this past year. Do you see something similar happening with the UEFA club competitions here in the US, in which the rights to each can be given to different broadcasters instead of bundled altogether for one broadcaster to bid on? So I think in terms of the UEFA deal, it's more likely that it actually is going to be bundled together. And it could be English and Spanish in one package. So again, if you're Apple TV, you're looking at this saying like, hey, with MLS, we got English and Spanish all together for 10 years. For the UEFA Champions League, we want the same thing for the six-year deal. And it's easy. It's easy for the consumer. It's easy for Apple TV. And if UEFA is happy with the amount of money that is being offered, then it's an easy one for UEFA also. Last but not least, about 11 Sports, Darth Bill says, I'm not at all excited about the DAZN 11 Sports thing. I'm still not sure how 11 Sports will monetize the site, let alone what DAZN would do. I really enjoyed being able to watch the Women's Champions games that DAZN put on YouTube this year, but I know that at some point they'll want me to pay. I'm not really into paying for everything I watch. I don't mind ads. I just get kind of tired of all this rights stuff. I can't keep track, and I have serious fear of missing out at times. Yeah, and Darth Bill, that's something too that here at worldsoccertalk.com, both on the website, on this podcast, in our newsletter, on social media, on a lot of the ebooks that we write, that's our goal, is to really simplify matters, is to make it so that you don't get too tired of all this right stuff. So we keep track of all of that to make it easier. Also with our app, our Soccer TV Schedules app, which is free on Android and Google Play, so that you can figure out where to watch these games and also to answer your questions about streaming or television, etc.